Scott Wheeler joins us from The Athletic here on Sportsnet 650. Good afternoon, Scott. How are you doing today?
Afternoon, guys. I'm doing well.
Good. You know, we were just having a great conversation because as we're peering through your list, you can't help but salivate at the idea that next year's Calder race in the NHL is going to be absolutely captivating. Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko, and all these defensemen that are going to have something to say about who gets, you know, into the final the short list for the Calder Trophy. I'm not going to ask you how you think it's going to end up. Chances are Hughes and Kakko will have a large say in that. But how interesting do you think the actual race will be in itself with all the number of young talent we're going to see as first-year players next year in the NHL?
I think it's going to be a really interesting year. The last couple of years we've kind of been spoiled, quite honestly, in terms of the races that we've been given. And it hasn't necessarily always been this sort of top-end players. Like, it wasn't a first overall pick like Nico Hischier. It's always been the other guys like Elias Pettersson and company who've kind of risen to the occasion and grabbed hold of it and shown that they have true sort of staying power in the NHL as stars. And I think that could be a factor this year. I think a kid like Hughes may take a little bit of time to get adjusted. There's no guarantee that they're going to break up the Hischier-Taylor Hall duo, so there's a chance that he's playing on that second line or potentially even the third line to begin the year and not playing with some high-end players. Kakko will certainly be right up there. I imagine he's going to play a prominent role on that Rangers team right out of the gate, and his game and his body of work is kind of built to play immediately and to be an impact player immediately, so I imagine he'll have a big year. And then you go down the list, Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, Bouchard will be interesting. I really like Adam Fox, who I think is also going to get a major role right out of the gate, quite honestly, with the Rangers. You've got Vitaly Kravtsov, who is also going to join the Rangers and be given a prominent role. Philip Zadina probably stays the full year in Detroit this year. So there are just a lot of sort of names and significant names in the hockey world that are going to be making that leap this year. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see who really grabs hold of it, who fades, and who has true star power, because the game is definitely trending younger. And we know now that these kids at 18, 19, 20 years old can step in and not just be impact players on their team, but in many cases be among the two or three best players on their team.
When you were going through this exercise and putting this list together, which you can see at the Athletic, were you surprised how many D-men you had ranked so highly? Not just Quinn Hughes, for those here listening in Vancouver, but Cale Makar, Bouchard, even Bowen Byram, who just got drafted. Were you surprised how many of these guys you thought would feature prominently in their lineups?
No, not really. The young D that have come out, particularly in last year's draft, and last year's draft, obviously, there was a ton made of Rasmus Dahlin, but it was really an exceptional draft from top to bottom on defense, and this year's draft kind of faded in that regard. I was actually really, really, really low on the defensemen in this year's draft, and I think a lot of them, from Moritz Seider to Philip Broberg, were taken too high by their respective teams, Victor Soderstrom included. So there were a lot of D that I was lower on this year. But in terms of last year's crop, and those guys, a lot of them haven't, because it takes defensemen a little bit longer, a lot of them haven't sort of established themselves. And I expect that now that they've had another year after their draft to just kind of get settled, whether it's in Europe or over here in North America, I think there's just a ton of talent there. Even guys like and Adam Boqvist and Ryan Merkley. Merkley's not going to play in the NHL by any means this year, but Merkley's a kid who has serious upside somewhere down the line. And a kid like Noah Dobson, even, who I would not be shocked in the least if he made the opening night roster and they gave him kind of a 9-game stint with the Islanders, just because I do feel like he's probably too good to go back to junior. And he's in that sticky situation that some kids get in, where the AHL is probably the best bet for them, but it's basically the NHL or junior hockey, because that's what the collective bargaining agreement has set out for these kids. And right on down the list, guys like Noah Dobson are going to be fascinating to watch this year, because if he can find a top four role on that Islanders team, they're talented enough up front and on the back end where he might be playing with some pretty good players, and then maybe he starts racking up some points and kind of forcing the conversation a little bit. So it definitely, last year's draft was one of the strongest drafts, probably since 2012. 2012 was a really weak draft, but it was really strong. You'll remember with players like Morgan Riley and Jacob Trouba on defense, Matt Dumba, et cetera. So last year's draft was probably the strongest on defense, and those guys all featured prominently on my list.
What dictates crafting a list like this? Do you value opportunity, or do you looking at primary and talent, and can guys kind of graduate from their expected roles when they come into training camp? Or are you just looking at the easiest path to success?
Well, for me, I don't tend to consider, quite frankly, opportunity or even the player's floor, their likelihood of making it in the NHL as a major factor in my evaluation. My evaluations are driven primarily by skill and upside. You'll notice if you look at my list that a lot of guys like Ryan Poehling, for example, who is going to be on the Montreal Canadiens this year after he had that fabulous debut at the end of the season last season, he features lower on my list just because I see him as a guy who ultimately is going to be a good third liner, maybe a very, very good third liner, but doesn't have the upside to be able to play higher in the lineup. And the guys who can play higher in the lineup, even if there's risk associated, I always go back to a player like Alexi Hepaniemi, the Florida Panthers prospect. This is a kid who's 150 pounds. He's either going to be an absolute star in the NHL or he's going to struggle with the strength of his opposing sort of players on the other side of the ice. And he's a kid who has always wowed me with his skill level, but there are serious questions until he kind of does it and proves it in the NHL, and there will remain those questions about his size. If he does make it in the NHL, he'll be one of the lightest players to ever play in the league. So kids like Hepaniemi tend to factor in higher on my list than most people probably expect they will, just because I think that ultimately a kid like him is going to figure it out, and I think that if he does figure it out, there's potential star power there. So guys like him and a Nick Suzuki and a Martin Nietzsche, some of these smaller players with really gigantic upside feature really highly on my board. A defenseman like Eric Brandstrom fits into that mold for the Senators as well. Quinn Hughes, obviously being at number three on my board, is a significant, significant player. Ultimately for me, it comes down to upside, and I tend not to worry too much about how safely a player might project into the NHL, and I tend to kind of swing for the fences on the kids that I think have a chance to be really, really dynamic offensive talents.
Yeah, you mentioned Quinn Hughes at third. He's the first defenseman on your rankings. You're ahead of guys that are also very impressive, like we saw out of Cale Makar and Adam Fox and all the excitement surrounding him with the Rangers now. That must mean, based on these rankings, that you feel that Quinn Hughes could have, if I'm not mistaken, either the strongest career or just the strongest next season when you have it ranked like this.
Yeah, the strongest career, ultimately. I think it's very close. Makar and Hughes were neck and neck for me. I debated having Makar 3 and Hughes 4, and I debated the other way around and ultimately settled on Hughes. I think ultimately what really pushed the envelope for Hughes for me is that, A, I think he's an extremely underrated defender. People who, particularly defensemen who are really tiny, they often, there are assumptions built into people, and whether that's fans or evaluators, before they've ever really watched the kids, that if you're 5'10", you're going to struggle to defend at the NHL level, and I don't think that's going to be the case for Quinn Hughes. And then his dynamic ability is just slightly, in most cases, better other than his shot, which would give Cale Makar the edge. Everything else about his game is just slightly more dynamic for me. He's a little bit better of a skater than Makar, even though Makar is a brilliant skater. A little more creative, a slightly better passer. So all of those things ultimately gave him a modest edge over Makar for me. And ultimately, I'm in love with both of those kids. Those two kids and Bowen Byram are probably the three defensemen on the list who have the true ability to be in the Norris conversation someday. And ultimately, I think we're going to hear within 3-4 years, players like Makar and Quinn Hughes and Bowen Byram ultimately in that conversation as among the 5, 6, 7 best defensemen in the world. And that says a lot about these kids, and it certainly puts a lot of pressure on them. But I don't use that kind of expectation lightly. I tend to be lower on kids than many people are before they enter the league, just because I think oftentimes too many expectations are placed on these kids. But those three defensemen in particular have the chance to be really dynamic number one defensemen who can play 25 plus minutes a night.
Yeah, the Canucks certainly are hoping that Quinn Hughes can live up to that because they look at him as such a big piece on that defense. But as I'm looking through this list here, Scott, Kaapo Kakko, Adam Fox, Vitali Kravtsov, three Rangers prospects in the top 36. They got Artemi Panarin. They just signed Jacob Trouba. Is this basically just a leeway into the Rangers being the next super team, the next great dynasty, like the Chicago Blackhawks and the Kings of the 2010s here? Because they just have seemingly so much talent that they can take their time with here.
Yeah, they've certainly done the whole rebuilding thing rather quickly. It hasn't happened in this sort of long time period that we've seen out of a lot of teams that have tried to rebuild in a similar way in recent years, and teams seem more prepared to tank and sort of start from scratch and build through youth than they were say, 4, 5, 6 years ago, when teams always kind of wanted to squeak into the playoffs and build that way. And I think that was a mistake, especially, I mean, look no further than a team like the Canucks that kind of got caught in the in-between where they weren't sure quite what they were going to be or how they were going to rebuild or whether they were going to rebuild or retool at all. So the Rangers have done it fabulously. It's been a lot of fun to watch. And that three players is without mentioning Condrey Miller, who, quite frankly, was number 51 on my list. And I nearly debated putting him on over a player like Ryan Poehling at number 50. So they really had four people ultimately in my top 50 and four people who deserve to be there. Plus, I mean, you mentioned it, but Artemi Panarin, et cetera, et cetera. So they've done a wonderful job. Even a kid like Anthony DeAngelo, who had 30 points in 61 games as a rookie defenseman last year, and Brett Howden, who they acquired from the Lightning, who had a decent rookie season last year. There's just a lot of young talent there for the Rangers. And them and probably the Colorado Avalanche, I think, are the two best teams or the two most well-positioned teams to really have a competitive window of multiple Stanley Cup runs in the next decade. You look at Colorado and my list, you've got Makar at 4, Bowen Byram at 8, and I believe Alex Newhook was at 27 or 28. So really, for them, you've got three players in the top 30, and their core and young core is already built around players like Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen, and obviously the young defensemen that they have in kids like Connor Timmins, who didn't make my list due to injury, and Sam Girard, who had a fabulous season last year and is another really strong young defenseman. So the Rangers and the Avalanche are the two teams that I would probably look at as having the most sustainable success moving forward.
It's Scott Wheeler of The Athletic joining us here on The Playbook. You talk about New York and Kako as well. In your piece, you mentioned Kako's impact should be more immediate. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, first of all, I think part of that's driven by role. I touched off the top on the fact that I think he will be given a more prominent role. I suspect he's going to play on their first line from game one, and I suspect he'll remain there until game 82. They're going to play him on the top power play right away, and that's true for players like Jack Hughes. Jack Hughes is going to play all 82 games if he stays healthy on PP1, but the opportunities that a player like Jack Hughes will be afforded at even strength, I think, may be reduced. Ultimately, that will be determined whether he plays with Taylor Hall or whether Hishier gets to play with Taylor Hall. But I think if Hughes doesn't play with Taylor Hall, that Kako is very likely to have a more dominant sort of impact this season, and Kako is going to get to play in all of the offensive situations that are available to a team like the Rangers. He's going to play with top talent on that team. And I just imagine that he's going to have this sort of less of a grace period, if you will. And part of that's also driven by his skill and the kind of player he is. He's bigger than Jack Hughes. He's stronger than Jack Hughes. He's got more finishing touch around the net than Jack Hughes does. Certainly Jack Hughes is the significantly better skater. He's the more creative player. Mm-hmm. He's the better passer. But the skill set that's there in Kako as a player who's going to step in and be a power forward immediately is the kind of skill set that just lends itself to sort of less of a grace period that I talked about. So I could imagine a situation where Kaapo Kakko puts up 60, 70 points this year, and that's not out of the question, I don't think, for Jack Hughes either, but I think you're going to need to check more boxes with Jack Hughes' development and the role that he plays if that's going to happen.
I wanted to ask you about one defenseman that was 14 on your list here, about the top 50 NHL prospects, ones that we expect to play in this NHL season. It's right-hander Adam Boyqvist for Chicago, who went 8th overall. This was a player that, coming into last year, a lot of people were excited about the offensive production. And we saw what Jeremy Colliton did with a guy like Gustafson last year, where on the power play kind of was a rover and was allowed to create, almost abandoning defensive principles. Could you see that role for Boyqvist, and how does his game translate to what we saw from Chicago last year?
Yeah, I could absolutely see that role for Boqvist, but I think that role has kind of always been tailored to his game, and I think it fits in Chicago. I think they will believe in him, and he's the kind of kid who will absolutely need a coach who's going to believe in him. There's players like him and Ryan Merkley who have so much talent, but where there's also a lot of risk built into their game. They need a coach who's willing to play them in offensive situations, who's willing to let them loose a little bit, who's willing to allow them to make plays in the offensive zone and take some chances and hope that they're going to get support from the forwards that are on the ice. And you also need a coach who's going to be cognizant of teaching those forwards that, hey, when you're out there with Adam Boqvist, you need to be paying attention to where he is on the ice, because if he jumps into the play, you need to support him defensively. So Boqvist is absolutely that kind of a player. I think there's a role for that kind of a player in the NHL. Certainly there are a ton of examples where that kind of a player sort of doesn't meet expectations. You can think of Ryan Murphy is probably the first player that comes to mind, a kid that was absolutely dominant and kind of a terror offensively in his junior career, and then ultimately has kind of bounced from AHL team to AHL team without really sticking at the NHL level. And I think Boqvist is talented enough where that's not going to be a major issue. And then he's so dominant on the power play as a scoring threat that he gives you a dynamic that very few teams in the NHL will have. He's a kid who, as a shooter, is as talented as I've seen in recent memory. He's more talented than Rasmus Dahlin was as a pure scoring threat. Dahlin does everything else better. But as a pure shooter, the kind of defenseman who can hop into the top of the slot and finish off plays, Boqvist is basically unrivaled on my list in terms of the defensemen that are available. And that's true of Cale Makar, et cetera, Adam Fox, et cetera. He really does have that element. Nick Hague, a Vegas Golden Knights prospect, has that element as well. But Boqvist is just so dynamic that I think it will work out. I think he's going to find a coach and convince a coach to play him in that kind of a role. It won't happen this year. I do not expect that he'll be in the NHL this year. But I think when it does happen, you're going to see him burst onto the scene, and you're going to see him as one of the more exciting players to watch on the power play.
Scott, before we let you go, you made a note at the beginning there, and what's lacking in this list is any goaltenders, and you almost could have had Ilya Sorokin in part of that mix. He just missed it. What's 2020 going to look like if you had to gaze into your crystal ball? Because there are certainly a lot of intrigue and excitement around a guy like Spencer Knight, maybe a potential to see more goaltenders for the next year's edition.
Yeah, certainly. And it's extremely challenging to include goaltenders in the list, A, because they're hard to, at that age, they're hard to evaluate. And unless they have a massive body of work, I included Carter Hart, in last year's list. But there are a number of goalies over the year that have just proven themselves for 3 or 4 years by the time that they're 21 or 22 to the point where you can look at them and say that kid's going to be a starter in the NHL. I think of obviously someone like Carter Hart. Andrei Vasilevsky was at that age before he'd ever entered the NHL. It was clear that he was going to be a starter. And I'm just not sold on the current crop of goalies in that way. I really like Spencer Knight. I really like Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, the Sabres prospect who was absolutely dominant as a rookie, quote-unquote rookie at least. He was a little bit on the old side to be considered a rookie in the OHL, but a first-year goalie in the OHL who was absolutely dominant. Igor Shesty-Yorkin's another kid, a lot like Ilya Sorokin, who has a pedigree now where you can look to his KHL numbers and say, this kid's legit. He's going to, if not be a starter, he'll definitely be a good backup. So there are players like that, but none of them have risen for me, at least not yet, to the level of a Carter Hart or an Andrei Vasilevsky, where I'm confident putting them in a top 50 list. So maybe that changes next year. It certainly will if a player like Spencer Knight goes to college and sort of is lights out as a freshman. The same will be true of Pekka Luukkonen if he can kind of figure everything out and continue to be a dominant goalie wherever he ends up playing. There's word of him playing pro hockey and not returning to the OHL. But it's extremely challenging. I've considered goalies like Thatcher Demko in the past, but for me, I just always revert back to the certainty that some of the forwards and defensemen have, and ultimately that's what keeps them in my list versus goalies where there's certainly, even with someone as talented as Spencer Knight, a lot of uncertainty with how they project moving forward.
Yeah, a very tricky position to really get a harness on. That's why the play of guys like Jordan Binnington were such a massive story, because who really could have seen it coming? Hey, Scott, appreciate you giving us your time and the breakdown of this excellent article. You can catch that at theathletic.com and follow Scott Wheeler on Twitter, at Scott C. Wheeler. We will talk again. In the meantime, enjoy a bit of sunshine and get to enjoy some summertime here as well.
Cheers. Back at you guys. Anytime.